Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Sid, I am so excited.
About what?
Well, I think our delivery of our furniture should be coming soon.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
you know, we
should
moved,
be coming soon.
And we have an extra room that we didn't have before, sort of like an actual living room type thing.
Exactly. We got a bigger place, and we realized we don't have a lot of furniture.
We don't. So we got furniture for a room, like a living room set. What I'm most excited about, I got a power armchair.
It's like a sectional.
Like a
big sectional, and then Justin got to assemble all the different pieces that he wanted
For my Father's Day gift, I got to have one that has power in it, so I got a power armchair. Listen to this. That was like Tim Allen.
Oh, that was very manly.
Topical humor for you.
I'm almost overcome by all the manliness.
Yeah, so I got a power armchair on the sectional, so I'm thrilled. I can't wait. Got a corner piece.
Uh-huh.
Got the love seat, got the power armchair, feeling very good about it.
Right. With all that manly power armchair going on over there, did you get a fainting couch? Maybe a power fainting couch for me?
No, I didn't get you a fainting couch or a power fainting couch, but to be honest, I didn't see that in the list of available options.
I'm not sure how that would work, like how you would power a fainting couch. Like,
well,
would it catch you?
I guess after you faint on it, you push the power button and it lifts you back to a seating position so you can pretend you didn't faint. Like, oh, me? No. I've been reclining this entire time.
That seems helpful. Will it also, like, get you the remote and a glass of water?
No, it's not a robot. It's just, like, it either goes up or down. It's not sentient.
Hold on. There is no robot coming with this couch?
There's no robot butler. Even though I requested one specifically, they said that it does not exist, and it would not be manufactured by the Lazy Boy Company.
The only reason that I agreed to the power chair was that I thought you were getting a robot of some sort.
I know the machines are coming for us. I'll be darned if I'm going to put a robot in a home with my family. My actual human flesh and blood family.
Thanks, Stephen Hawking, for making Justin afraid of robots.
I'm not afraid of robots. I'm just ready for them. Fainting.
Yeah, you've been listening to him. He's warned us that they're coming and that they're going to take over.
Why did you mention a fainting couch, by the way? That's not nothing I've heard you request before.
Because I've just been thinking a lot about fainting, and I thought maybe some people would want to hear about it, and there you go.
That was perhaps the greatest segue deflection in Sawbones history. Why did you ask about fainting couches? Is it because we're doing an episode on them? No, it's because I've been thinking about them. Back to you, Justin.
Oh, do you think we should do an episode on it?
Yeah, sweetheart, why not? Let's just go for it and see, let the chips fall where they may.
Okay, well, good. I was planning on it.
Okay, good. Thank goodness. What a relief.
So first of all, thank you to several people who suggested this topic. Devin, Ryan, Katie, Jason, Jillian, and Hillary. That's the masses are crying out for fainting. Fainting, or perhaps you prefer to call it syncope.
I don't.
No. Syncope is the medical word we use for fainting, by the way.
Okay. Why do you guys have to come up with fancy terms for everything? confuse the rest
of us. So you won't know what we're talking about.
Ah, I always suspected as much.
So we can talk about you in the hallways and you'll have no idea what we're saying. No, I don't know. Just to terrorize medical students mainly.
Okay, I can live with that.
Fainting, syncope, swooning, perhaps, if you're feeling romantic.
Yeah.
Swooning. People have been passing out and then writing about it for a really long time.
Yeah, it seems like one of the oldest tricks you could do.
Yeah, and it wasn't really something that was necessarily always a medical thing to write about because, it kind of fixes itself, right? Like, for the most part.
Yeah, by the time you'd get the village doctor over to take a look at you, you're already, like, up and at him.
Exactly. And, like, you've already come out of it, and unless you have a really serious condition, it's probably not going to happen to you a lot.
Right. So, and it's probably not dangerous unless you, like, fainted into a bear.
Well, that would... Okay, yes. Or, in general, like, where did you faint? Like, did you hit your head? You know, I mean, it can be dangerous.
Yeah.
But everybody had a name for it. Everybody recognized it. The Greeks called it a cardiac passion.
Very romantic.
I really like that name, that you have a cardiac passion.
Does it have to do much with the heart, though?
It can. There are a lot of different causes of fainting. There are a lot of different ones. And there are quite a few that have to do with the heart. So relating it to the heart is not a bad idea. And relating it to a passion, to passion in general, is kind of a theme that we'll see. Mm-hmm. The idea that it has something to do with like an overwhelming emotion. Galen wrote about it, and he related it to fevers, which isn't totally off base.
Really?
You can get sick, get a fever, get dehydrated, pass out.
Okay.
That happens. It used to be thought that it was a type of epilepsy. A lot of people would describe it as a sort of epilepsy.
People with epilepsy do have spells, right, where they'll lose consciousness?
Well, I mean, you're talking about seizures.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it certainly...
They didn't want to get technical on you.
Certainly, if you didn't know much about either of these things, either if we're just talking about syncope or seizures, if you saw someone have a seizure, you may think that it was fainting, and if you saw somebody fainting, right, you may think it was a seizure. So, I mean, yeah, if depending on what kind of seizure it is, it could look very similar.
Yeah, I don't know why the term seizure didn't come to me earlier. It just... Spells.
You're just putting yourself in the mindset of the, you know, old-timey.
There we go. I'm basically an old-timey medicine guy. It's about where my knowledge base is at.
Like I said, it was previously associated with a strong emotion, which is why it wasn't always kind of like a medical problem. You know, Hippocrates wrote about it. Galen wrote about it. There were lots of commentary, but there were also like poets and authors writing about it as well. You know, kind of like, it was this interesting time where you would, if you passed out and when you wake back up and you're being brought back to life, so to speak. And so a lot of people had a lot of arty things to say about it, too. So mm-hmm. It was thought that you could be overcome by love or anger or hatred or amazement and just, you know, hit the floor.
Can you tell me what fainting is?
Well, I mean, it depends on exactly what causes it. Mm-hmm. But in general, what we're talking about is that for a moment, your brain is not getting quite enough blood flow for some reason.
Okay.
Generally speaking. So, and this could be because you had an irregular heart rhythm, because you're dehydrated, because your blood pressure dropped. There's some, you know, neurological issues that can cause this. But for some reason, for a second, the pressure that keeps blood pumping upwards against gravity to your brain was not enough, or your brain thought it wasn't going to get blood flow. And so it's actually kind of a way to save your life. As a result, you hit the ground. Makes you go horizontal. Mm-hmm. So then you'll get blood flow to your brain. That's kind of a general way to think about it. And when, and of course, when you pass out, you lose consciousness. So mm-hmm. syncope, fainting, swooning, you're losing consciousness. That's part of the definition, you know, that you lost consciousness. You can be out for a few seconds up to a few minutes. Generally, it's just a few seconds. And usually when you wake up, you feel okay. Like, you're not confused. You're not disoriented unless you smacked your head or something as well, or if you did have a seizure. Usually you wake up and you know you're kind of back to your old self again.
Have you ever fainted?
Yes. I have.
When?
What? How do you not know this about me?
I don't know.
When I was in middle school, I had a kind of syncope called vasovagal syncope, and I used to pass out not all the time, but not infrequently either.
Weird.
It's something that some adolescents get and usually grow out of, especially young women tend to get it, and I did, and so I just had to be really careful when I would stand up, because if I would stand up too quickly and start walking, I would pass out, so I had to like stand up for a second and chill and take my time. And
I only fainted once when I was at a sleepover at a church somewhere. These kids were doing this thing where you like breathe real deep 10 times and then someone grabs you from behind and lifts you up and mm-hmm. it makes you faint.
Yes.
They did that. It was not pleasant. It was scary. So now it's, and a couple of times I've laughed so hard that I've almost fainted. Like I've, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. you kind of lose control and you black out for just a split second. I've done that a few times.
Those sound like really good times that you were laughing so hard you blacked out.
Yeah, it's usually about something I said, though.
Something
really funny.
You're kind of talking about vagal reactions there, and then the fainting game or the choking game, I think I saw it called. That's something that a lot of people do. I did that when I was younger, too. I've passed out from that before. Yeah.
It's a good time. It's a good way to kill all the time.
It's not a good idea. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
You're hyperventilating, which is throwing off your acid base balance in your body. And then you're attempting to kind of deprive yourself of blood flow to your brain briefly. Don't do that.
No. Your brain loves blood. Just letting it all the blood it wants.
If you're that desperate to pass out, may I suggest what we call Stendhal syndrome?
Now, what is that?
Stendhal syndrome it's actually kind of a psychogenic fainting, meaning that you're not really passing out in the way that we kind of think about it from a medical standpoint, but it was named for a French writer who described the first time that he saw Florence, the first time that he experienced the city Florence. Mm-hmm. Basically, he almost passed out. He was overcome by the beauty and the art and just the romance and all that is Florence.
So the first time I watched the second Ace Ventura movie. Same basic principle.
Exactly. You had Stendhal syndrome. You almost passed out.
Good to know. Glad there's a name for it.
There is. And because of these associations, it was actually okay for a long time for both men and women to pass out.
Okay.
You know, like it was something that could, like a great passion or a great beauty could overcome you regardless of your sex and you might, you know, pass
you're
out.
You're plugged in. You're living life to the fullest.
Exactly. And the reason I mention this is that when a lot of what we talk about when we talk about fainting is really related to the Victorian era. And that's when fainting becomes swooning, because then it becomes a very feminine, delicate, romantic, like, you know, what we typically associate with like fainting couches. Like,
right.
Oh, it's too much for me. And it really was in the Victorian era. It was thought that if a woman was rich and well-to-do and you know, high class and the kind of woman that was socially acceptable would just be overcome by anything that was shocking or scary or vulgar or too sad, anything like that. And the socially acceptable way to respond to any of that stimuli was just to pass out. And it probably had something to do with the fact that at the time, women weren't allowed to have a lot of emotional responses in public. It would have been considered vulgar if you were of a high class to have any kind of outburst other than this codified way to express your emotions. You can pass out.
So codified, they had like couches for it.
Exactly. So there were in you know, and we're talking about richer households, sure, you know, right. Upper class households. You may have a fainting couch, which is just a really nice couch with like one side. Everybody's probably sure. seen them with one side in the back, and so that you can kind of just like access it by. I mean, I guess you have to be standing right next to it at all times, really.
Well, I think you feel it coming. You feel a spell coming on. You say, "I got to faint. Somebody get me the fainting room so I can get this done."
Well, and you can. I think that they would have experienced it like that. Someone would have, exactly like you imagine, like throw the back of their hand to their head and gasp suddenly and begin to get the vapors fanning themselves.
Joseph
and then
Merrick
they are dragged over to the couch. And
Joseph Merrick pulls the sack from over his head, and they gaze upon the elephant man in all his splendor, and they're just overtaken. They have to head over to the fainting room.
And they just hit the couch. And you mentioned fainting rooms a couple times, and that was something I hadn't realized existed. There were fainting rooms as well.
Oh, I thought I made that up. Sorry.
No, there were actual, and that would be in your really,
really nice,
really nice houses. You would have a whole room devoted to fainting. And part of this too, though, there's a little bit of overlap. Remember in the hysteria episode, we talked a little bit about the secret pelvic massage that women could get to relieve their hysteria.
Yeah.
Well, the fake disease hysteria was also correlated with fainting. And so in order to fix this problem, you may invite your doctor to your fainting room where you would lay on your fainting couch and get a little bit of massage to relieve your issues.
Cool doctors back then. Cool docs.
So, similarly to this, by the way, there is something called falling out, which this sounds kind of like the Victorian fainting. Mm-hmm. It's a culture-bound syndrome, meaning that you only see this, kind of like nerves are around here. You only see this in certain parts of the world, like the American South or in the Caribbean, where something is very emotional, and so you would pass out, except that you're really awake the whole time. Like, you can see and hear what's going on around you, but you passed out, so...
Hmm.
It's a whole other thing.
It's like the most extreme like response you can come up with at the time.
Exactly.
It just overcomes you.
And it's acceptable because that's what we understand. That's how you react. It would be like, you know, in some cultures it would be okay to scream or to laugh really loudly or whatever.
Were there, you know, I know there is the obvious treatment for this, which is wait.
Exactly.
But were there other things that cooked up?
There were. So, as far as treatments, the most common that we have had for a really long time, this goes all the way back to our buddy Pliny.
Pliny.
We haven't talked about Pliny in a while. So Pliny the Elder recommended this. Smelling salts, which were originally made from the, it was called hartshorn. And that was because, and I didn't know this, so hart is an old word for stag or a deer.
Mm-hmm.
And shorn because of it's like you would get shavings off the horns of the deer. So hartshorn is like the shavings from the.
Okay.
Yeah, and there were ammonium salts in these shavings, and you could use that as as smelling salts, which is
gross.
I don't know who figured that out.
Kind of really gross.
It's basically ammonium carbonate. And like I said, it's been around since ancient times. The way that it works, because smelling salts, I think most of us are familiar with those.
Right.
Is that...
I've always wondered about that because I've never like actually seen them, and they're in every movie and TV show ever made.
I've never actually seen them either.
It's weird.
I'm sure
like, I haven't seen them at Rite Aid or whatever. Like, do you get them there?
I don't know that you can just buy them.
Weird.
Ammonium gas is made... By the salts, and it irritates the mucous membrane, so the lining of your nose. So you hold them under somebody's nose, it irritates the lining and makes you inhale and breathe quickly. And it also starts to stimulate your sympathetic nervous system, which is what's in charge of like your fight or flight response. So it kind of, I mean, that's how it wakes you up. So it stimulates everything.
Huh.
Most fainting is mediated by the other kind of nervous system, the parasympathetic.
You know, this is like that mothballs. Speaking of things with ammonia-based scents, like...
And they do.
Yeah, mothballs. Like, I know that's a thing. Where are people getting mothballs? I've never seen them.
Like Walmart?
Like, are they in Walmart? Have you... Like, really try to picture ever seeing mothballs. Like...
Walmart's really big.
It's
I think you'd
big,
have to
though.
Look for them to know.
You think there's a mothball and smelling salts like section that we've just been missing the whole time?
Well, I know what we're doing tomorrow.
Yep.
Now, in Victorian times, police officers, constables, or other just generally helpful men, I guess, would carry something in order to be helpful to all of these poor, fainting, upper-class women who were, you know, unable to express their emotions in any other way.
Oh, man, you never let me down.
That was called a vinaigrette.
Mm.
Delicious.
And not, yes, not that kind.
Oh.
A vinaigrette is, it's a small container that has like a sponge soaked in smelling salts, and then usually it would be dissolved in like vinegar or alcohol, and you'd also have perfume in it, so it would also smell kind of nice, like bad and nice. And you would have it closed at all times, but you would have these little like silver fancy, they were all like, you know, inlaid and engraved, sure, and intricate, and you could open them and helpfully hold them to the nose of the woman who has just passed out.
I'm just going to start doing that, like just to women mid-conversation, just like, madam, excuse me, you seem to be on the verge of a fainting spell. Allow me.
I have some vinaigrette here.
Allow me to sample my vinaigrette, madam.
It's red wine.
It's delicious, but for you, you seem to be about to faint. I'm about to tell a story so scandalous about my college years in college that I'm afraid you shall faint. So I have a vinaigrette prepared.
And that's the opening to Animal House.
That is the beginning of Animal House.
In addition...
Gentlemen, guard your ladies. For the tale of collegiate scandal, your eyes shall behold would wash the white paint from a picket fence.
Are you done?
Bluto the first of the characters.
Okay, nope. We're going to move on. If you don't
have... Organist, begin the soundtrack.
If you don't have smelling salts, you could try just lavender water, I guess because it smells better. There was something called Hungry Water, which was the same idea. It was like...
From the creators of Hungry Man.
There's Hungry Water. It was just water with like some nice smelling herbs and floral things so that it would smell good.
To be clear, that's Hungary, like the country.
Hungary, yes. Hungary. Laudanum was a popular treatment. Which I think if I were a Victorian woman and I was forced to, the only way I could, you know, socially acceptably express my emotions was to pass out.
Right, huh?
I'd be like, yeah, I need some laudanum for that.
Oh, golly.
That helps with the fainting all the time. And then bloodletting throughout history was a popular treatment, especially if you fainted from blood loss. Bloodletting was a good idea.
I wonder if you had a lot of fainting at the Red Cross around donation time, you think?
Yeah, that's a very common cause of fainting is blood, like the sight of blood. There are a lot of people who have it.
I just mean after you give blood and like...
Oh, well, you can do that too.
Right, and faint.
Mm-hmm. Some people do. I mean, you really generally don't give enough that it should, but it's possible. Fainting, like I said, it's very much when we think about it in a medical and social context, it's very much a Victorian thing. And a lot of people like to blame corsets for fainting.
Oh, yeah? How did that work?
Well, I want to tell you all about corsets and fainting, but before I do that, why don't you come with me to the billing department?
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth. You got so much to take care of. Spring's right around the corner. You're busy. You're cleaning up. You're getting your life back in order. You're getting ready to emerge like from your chrysalis, like a beautiful butterfly. You don't have time to slave away in the kitchen. You don't have time to waste a bunch of time cooking dinner that you don't have time to do. You got to get out there, but you still got to feel your body, give it the delicious, fresh stuff that it craves, right? Well, good news, because there's Factor. These meals are always fresh, never frozen, and they're ready to eat in about 2 minutes. You don't have to prep them. No prep, no stress. Slap them in the microwave, heat them up, and they're going to be delicious. Not like the microwave meals you remember from when you were a kid, kind of grody. These are nice. These are designed by dietitians. They're crafted by chefs. So you're going to eat well. You're going to eat in a way that sustains you and makes you happy. And it's not going to take a lot of your time. Head to factormeals.com/sawbones50off and use code sawbones50off to get 50% off and free breakfast for a year. Eat like a pro this month with Factor. New subscribers only, varies by plan. One free breakfast item per box, one for 1 year while subscription is active. You know, sometimes I waste too much time thinking. Thought is the root of all suffering. You know, that's something that I've heard that I think there's a lot of truth in. So why don't we try let go of thought and get into action, right? Get your project in front of you and start building a website for it with Squarespace. Squarespace is a fantastic tool for creating your website because
first of all, you can start building out these ideas in a way that lets you visualize them, right? I'm not a thinker that thinks in words. I have to think in images. So with a Squarespace website, you're able to start taking that idea out of your brain and putting it in front of you. And it's going to look great because the templates you're going to be using are made by world-class designers, some of the best in the biz. And if you're having trouble with any of the stuff that you're doing with your Squarespace website, they have incredible support that's there to have your back every step of the way. And with a Squarespace website, you can't just like share information. You can really kind of do anything with these websites. You can sell products, calendars, just keeping in touch, whatever. The Squarespace tools are incredibly powerful and flexible and well worth checking out. Head to squarespace.com/sawbones for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code sawbones to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hi, I'm Lisa Hannawalt.
And I'm Emily Heller. And if you're not listening to our podcast, Baby Geniuses, you're missing out on stuff like
Camille Nanjiani solving the Zodiac murders.
Who's like, would you ever go to a friend and you're like, hey, could you lick all these envelopes for me? You'd be like, you're a serial killer. I'm leaving right now.
Guy Branum talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
And it was just a great moment of like, oh no, I'm here, boys. Like, I'm on this side of the bench.
Megan Amram talking about intimidating baristas.
Just feel like they're always in character. Like, they're always in character as, like, cool hipster girl. Mm-hmm. And I just want to break through that barrier.
Plus, every week we explore a new Wikipedia page and talk to a crazy expert in the field of nonsense.
Well, any hack can make you not have a boner. I mean, it's about how you do it.
Right.
You
know?
And we're the only podcast with regular updates about Martha Stewart's pony or your money back.
We're not going to give them their money back, are we?
No.
Let's keep it.
Yeah.
Listen to our show every other Monday on Maximum Fun.
Yay.
Sid, tell me about corsets.
So let's talk about corsets.
Yes.
Because I don't think you can mention Victorian times and fainting without it. So when we talk about, I think most people kind of picture corsets as like the thing that they're all wearing in like the Lady Marmalade video.
Yes.
Okay. Originally, corsets were a pair of what we would have called stays or bodies or like bodices. And they were these two these two pieces of something stiff, like stiff brocade kind of stuff, mm-hmm. that you would put on either side of your trunk and then lace together. And it would create like an inverted cone.
Okay.
You know, out of your upper body.
Very attractive.
And it would also have these little flared out pieces on the bottom that would kind of go underneath your skirt to kind of keep your skirt out and to keep the bottom of the bodice from like cutting into your skin and all that kind of stuff. They were initially an Italian creation, but they became very popular when Catherine de' Medici introduced them to the French court and all the French ladies loved them. You'll see like these old like iron cages and things from this era. We're talking about like the 1500s. That was probably like some really bad attempt at like an orthopedic brace and not what an actual corset was made of at the time.
Okay.
So if you see that and you're like, oh my gosh, women suffered in these corsets, that probably wasn't a corset.
Yeah.
So you would lace the stays together and then you would put all your clothes on over top. But a lot of women didn't use them at first because the bodices of their dresses were kind of stiff. So you wouldn't necessarily need these. It wasn't until we started, like women started wearing kind of looser things on over top of that, that these became like undergarments now.
Okay.
So you wouldn't wear a stiff bodice dress. You would wear something stiff underneath, something looser on top. And so as we move forward, we kind of see that kind of trend. And instead of just lifting the bust and smoothing the waist, we really start to attempt to shape the female form into something that, let's be honest, that men liked.
Got right? it. Yes. Yes.
Now, when we talk about corsets in like a medical context, and especially in like a kind of from a feminist perspective,
mm-hmm.
what we're really upset about, I think, what most people get upset about is the tight lacing.
Okay.
So you get this image, and I think most of us, you remember, you saw Gone with the Wind.
Oh, yeah.
So you see, you remember Scarlett O'Hara up against the bedpost?
Yeah, I got that. I remember in the book it said she had a 17-inch waist. That seemed insane to me.
Right. And that's when people start talking about, oh my gosh, that was so unhealthy and so many women were in these tight-fitting corsets.
They looked great. I mean, we can all agree on that.
Did they?
Am I right, guys?
Did they?
Guys, let me hear you. Dog Pound, where you at?
For corsets?
Where's my corset dog pound? I see one guy.
Corsets?
You know, we're hound dogs.
Anyway, so most women did not.
I like a woman who just is like seems to be on the verge of blacking out constantly.
Most
they laugh at your jokes more, which I appreciate.
Hey,
hey, it's true.
Most women didn't lace themselves that tightly. It was rare to find a woman who would have tightened herself below 20 inches. So that whole 17-inch thing, I mean, yes, certainly there were women who did that, but that was not the majority of women. Mm-hmm. And that was really the Victorian era when we see that kind of association, that you're not just using it to kind of shape the body that's underneath your clothes, but you're actually shaping your body. You're actually trying to force your body into a different shape.
Right.
And from the beginning of corsets, you hear, like, there are accounts of doctors upset about them. Even when corsets really weren't that restrictive, when they first came out, they really weren't. But you've got doctors talking about how, like, oh, it's going to smush their internal organs and they're not going to be able to breathe.
Does it smush them?
Well, I'm going to tell you about that.
Okay.
Let me tell you a little bit more about corsets. No, don't get ahead of me. I'm going to tell you about that. It was interesting. In response to this, in the Edwardian area, we saw like a different corset introduced that they called the S-shaped corset, because it would kind of form your body into an S, like your upper body and your breast would be kind of thrust forward, and then your butt would be kind of pushed backwards, and you get like an S shape.
Ah, nice.
And that was supposed to be better for you. It was called like the health corset. Like they had ads where they had like 5-year-olds in these.
If they had a TV ad, you know it would be set to like, I will survive. Just women dancing around in their S-shaped corsets, like, come on, girl, get it.
But this one, unfortunately, was probably worse for your back than the original corset.
Oh, no, girl, don't get it. Sorry, girl.
As we move forward through the into the 1900s, women want to move more. Mm-hmm. Now, they were able to do a lot of stuff in those corsets, contrary to popular belief. Women were, like, riding horses and, you know, doing all kinds of things in the corsets. But they wanted to move a little freer. Dance trends affected this. It was hard to tango in a lot of corsets. And then finally, I think kind of the death knell for like, the widespread use of corsets was World War I, when they needed to free up all of the steel that they were using in the corsets. And so the War Department asked everybody, like, hey, would you please stop wearing corsets? And do you know
Did that really make an impact, though?
Made a huge impact. Women stopped wearing... I mean, maybe they were just looking for an excuse, but women stopped wearing corsets. There actually, one site said that there was enough steel saved from not selling corsets to make two battleships. Two battleships were entirely made out of, you can think about, corset materials. And they almost came back right before World War II, but then World War II had the same problem. So
right. You need that steel back. So, sorry, I mean, ladies.
Not that corsets have ceased to exist.
I hate
certainly
to disappoint
we see
them. You, but unfortunately we need those to make battleships.
Certainly there are still more people wearing corsets and there are, you know, fashion trends with corsets. But the health effects.
Okay.
So this is incredibly controversial.
Naturally.
You could read about this for decades if you wanted to. But... if we're talking about what was detrimental, the most detrimental were people who did the tight lacing. So when you talk about people with like 17-inch waists, there is some documentation that it can decrease your lung capacity. So you get a little more short of breath, which is probably where the association with fainting was. Mm-hmm. Although not everybody was passing out because of corsets.
Of course, yeah.
It can misshape your ribs. Like if you look at, they have x-rays of people wearing corsets and it actually can kind of push them into different positions. Although that whole story about how women would remove their ribs to fit into corsets, as far as we know, that never happened. I mean, if you imagine surgery in the 1800s, who's going to go through that procedure? I mean, they would have died.
You would have died. Guaranteed.
It can cause, because of the way it's kind of squeezing your gastrointestinal tract, it can cause indigestion. Tight corseting can cause constipation. It does shift your organs a little bit. And so there was some thought that maybe it could have led to uterine prolapse, where like your uterus kind of pokes down into the vaginal canal a little bit.
Oh, man.
And so it may have contributed to that, possibly, in some of these tight corseters. It can absolutely cause back and hip pain and gait abnormalities in some of the corsets in some women. And then there's this whole concern about like pregnancy, because women corseted while they were pregnant. And did it cause miscarriages? I don't really know. There was one study where they studied skeletons, and like tight corseters also had slightly smaller pelvises. And so there was this whole theory, could it have led to... We don't really know. I don't really know. I can't answer that question. It can cause muscle atrophy because you're not using your muscles to hold you upright.
Right.
Of course it is. And it can cause skin irritation depending on the design of the corset, you know, where it rubs you.
Of course, yeah.
A lot of the things that doctors freaked out about and said that it caused are not true. It didn't cause tuberculosis, obviously. It didn't cause hysteria because that's a fake thing. So that wasn't real. It didn't cause cancer. It didn't cause liver failure.
Because those are fake.
No, those are real. No, they're real.
Got it. All right.
But it, all in all, they probably weren't quite as bad as we've all been led to believe. If you use them appropriately, and certainly women who and men who like to corset now, I think take the proper precautions, and so you don't have to worry about all of this stuff quite so much. There were the extremists who did, but they probably weren't the horrible thing for your bodies that we always thought they were.
So hooray for corsets.
No, I'm not saying that, because this gets into like the idea of like who wanted corsets. Because my opinion of it was always like it was, men found it beautiful, and so women conformed to the male ideal of beauty and that kind of thing. But there's been arguments that like, well, no, all women wanted a corset. And so it was just women choosing to wear what was fashionable at the time. But I don't know that that makes much sense, because saying that like at the time that it was socially acceptable to be corseted, all women also happened to want to wear corsets is like saying that like before Elizabeth Blackwell, no women really wanted to be doctors anyway. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards we all decided that it might be fun to be a doctor. So I don't know that I buy that argument. But people have said that they think that the reason doctors were always so against them is not because of health concerns, but because they thought male doctors didn't like the increased sexuality of women who were able to maintain these womanly figures even after they were mothers.
Oh. Huh.
Which, I don't know.
So the corset as a female empowerment.
Exactly. Symbol. So it depends on how you look at it. Yeah. Either way, if you didn't do it right and you laced too tightly, you could probably hurt yourself in some minor ways. But I don't know that it caused all of the fainting that we saw in the Victorian
era. Is fainting ever like an actual concern? Like, should I do anything about it if I start fainting?
Yeah. If you start passing out, go see your doctor. Absolutely. Like I said, there are lots of different conditions that can lead to fainting, and we kind of talked about some of them and why it could happen. I have a brilliant ER doctor, though, who always told me that if I had a patient who came to the ER fainting, the money's in the heart. It could be. So that's why it may be nothing. You may be dehydrated. You may just, you know, some people pass out every time they poop. Some people pass out when they pee. Some people pass out if they cough too hard. Those are all vagal reasons. Totally benign. No big deal, but inconvenient. But there are some serious causes of syncope or fainting. So if you pass out, I'd go get checked out.
What's that mean? The money's in the heart. What is that?
That's where you should look.
That's where you should look.
Yeah.
Not like that's where you should look to raise money to get more money. Is that what you mean?
No. No, that's where the answer would be.
Got it.
That's where, yeah, look at the heart. And if nothing else, that's the thing you want to rule out, because that's really the scary stuff, right?
Sure. I want to tell you, Sid, we have two new podcasts on the Maximum Fun Network, of which we are proud members.
Well, tell me about them.
Well, the first is called We Got This with Mark and Hal, which features Mark Gagliardi and Hal Lublin from the very funny Thrilling Adventure Hour. You may know him from there. And also the other is called Can I Pet Your Dog, which is produced by my brother, Travis McElroy.
Not that guy again.
But is the episode that has just premiered, the very first episode, features our buddy, Lin-Manuel Miranda, talking about his dog, Toby, and I think you should listen to both of those.
So go check them out.
That's what I think, Sid.
But listen to our show first.
Listen to our show first, always, twice, in case you missed anything. And then go listen to their shows. Maximum Fun is your home for comedy podcast hits. That's a new slogan that I'm working on for them.
I'm sure they'll appreciate it.
Should catch on like wildfire. You can find both those shows I mentioned at MaximumFun.org, as well as on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are sold. Thank you to the taxpayers for letting us use their song as the intro and outro of our program. If you search for Taxpayers the Medicines, you will find that track and you can buy it or just tweet at them and say, hey, thanks. Want to remind you that we're going to be coming to the Pacific Northwest in the last weekend of August. We'll be in Seattle. You can get tickets to that bit.ly/MBMBAM Seattle. And we're also going to be in Vancouver, bit.ly/van MBMBAM. We're going to be performing with my brother, and me, which is an advice podcast I do with my brothers. We'd really like it if you come out and see us. Charlie will be there, and Sydney's sister Riley's going to be turning 15 when we're in Vancouver.
So if you want to bring her birthday presents,
go nuts.
She'd love them.
She'd love that. Anyway, that's going to do it for us. Until the next time, we have a topic to discuss with you. I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
As always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.